Welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. You know, folks, I got to tell you, I've been an organizer for a long period of time. I really enjoy the work. It is great to be out there and helping people. And a long time ago, somebody told me, you know what, union organizing, you're doing God's work. And I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And somebody who does God's work a lot better than I do, thank goodness for Sister Simone Campbell with Nuns on the Bus. Sister Simone, welcome back to the Union Edge.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Thank you very much. And I, from the bottom of my heart and many other hearts, God bless you for what you're doing. We need it, and we appreciate your efforts along with everybody else on your team.
Thank you for that. But we're just doing the work that needs doing. We're all involved in this, so it's all about the 100%. We're all engaged.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you are out right now talking to people all across the country. I think you're in Kentucky today, but you're talking about people getting out and vote. That's a wonderful thing.
Oh, it's a huge thing to get out and vote. What we've realized is that in our nation, so many people are getting so discouraged because there's all this big money ads, there's all the press about big money. But, you know, the fact is dollar bills can't vote. And we, the people, have got to stand up for our democracy. That's why we're on the road to wake people up and say we, the people, can make a difference.
Absolutely. And it's a very, very important thing. And it's how people shape their future. And they look after their family. They look after themselves. They look after their community. And it's a wonderful thing. And we appreciate you doing that right now. I want to ask you, what is the response from communities when you pull up in the bus and they see you and they hear you talk? What are people saying?
Oh, my glory. Well, there's an amazing amount of cheering, which sort of makes me chuckle. But the thing that people are saying is the tough story of their lives. Recently, we have these town halls for the 100% where we try to get everybody together to have conversations about what the needs are. And we were just in Detroit just before coming here to Kentucky. And in Detroit, it was so poignant to hear the struggle of people getting to the polls, of the issues of transportation. And then at the end of the roundtable, the last, we had maybe like 350, 400 people in the room, and the last person to stand up and speak was this elderly African-American woman who said, and you know, for some folks, reading is tough. And we need help with the reading. We know who we need in office, but we need help with the reading. And I thought, what a vulnerable position for folks to be in. If you don't feel comfortable with reading and really keeping track of who you're voting for, you really need to get somebody you can trust. So learning about trust, about the needs of real people, about the struggle they have every day, it's been, those are the stories that we're hearing that break my heart.
Sister Simone, let me ask you this. It appears to myself and many others, people have forsaken faith for the dollar. And how do we reach those people and say, you know what, it's okay to make a buck or two for yourself, and it's okay to do well for yourself in this country, and that's fine, but you cannot do it at the expense of others.
Oh, amen, amen. And what we did was have a business roundtable in Chicago with six entrepreneurs, very successful folks. But what came out of that was the realization. One of the guys said, well, you know, it's not about getting more money. Folks who run businesses are very competitive, and they like to win. And the current measure of winning is money. And so I had this insight that, well, it really appears we need to change the measure of winning. And that then becomes the way forward, because everybody has some good qualities and some problems in their lives. We're all human, but everybody needs to come to the table. So I keep saying, you know, if you've got big money bags, that's great. Congratulations. Fabulous. Leave your money bags outside the door. Come to the table. You cannot buy the table of democracy, because if you buy the table, it isn't democracy. So we, the people, have got to come together. We've got to change some of the measures of success, but we've got to include everyone in the conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of including everybody in the conversation, I seem to remember that you had invited Representative Paul Ryan to come on the bus and have a nice conversation with you. And you were going to, you know, educate him on some of the things that maybe he could be doing better. Did he take you up on that?
Well, absolutely. He's always invited on the bus. I have had a couple of conversations with him. And the good news is that he's beginning to talk about the concerns of poverty. Now, the problem is he still thinks it's an issue of folks just either being lazy or not having jobs. What he doesn't realize is that a large percentage of folks living in poverty are working full-time for minimum wage. And so we're working hard with him to see the reality. I still have an invitation out to him to come meet my people. But so far, it's just been in his office.
Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Let me turn you to the Vatican and the Pope. The Pope, he looks at things a little bit differently, and many people think that in a more compassionate and Christian manner. As a man of faith, I am I rejoice in that, and I think that he's leading us in the right direction. What do you say to the naysayers that are out there?
Oh, you know, the fact is Pope Francis is doing an amazing job of leading us forward, to live in a more gospel-focused way as opposed to the rules and the laws. And the fact that he's a pastoral person and understands the struggle we all have, that's huge. That is huge in my book. But what happens is people get frightened. And for everybody who gets frightened and thinks it's wrong and wants to be judgmental, it's all about our own insecurity. We just have to know that we're loved by God. We have to say, relax, lighten up. It's okay. And where we meet in our nation is in the Constitution, so it's we the people. But in our faith, really this faith commitment to loving everyone, as Jesus said, what a shocking idea if we could embrace everyone with love.
Absolutely. I noticed that you say the 100%, and I think that's an important thing. Our friends that are the 1%, they need to be helped too.
Absolutely. And what we've realized is often they feel extremely alone, frightened, challenged, and are the most anxious in this economy and feel like they could lose everything at any moment. So they're very tense, very worried, and they don't know the gift of community. That's what we're working on. I also might add, we're working on building community among workers. And tomorrow in Lexington, we're having a labor roundtable where we get folks from labor together to balance out our business roundtable to hear the perspective of folks, of the hardworking folks trying to build community. This is what it's really about, is that we the people have gotten into a individualism and isolation that's driving us apart, and big money is trying to frighten us and keep us separate. We the people is all about community, coming together to form this more perfect union, or as we say in our faith, the common good. That's what we're about. So we're going to do our best to build community wherever we go.
Absolutely, and the Kentucky AFL-CIO is very lucky to have you in town, so to speak. We've got about 2 minutes left, Sister Simone. Any final words for us today?
Oh, absolutely. For everybody that's listening, know that you are a valued member of our society. We need you engaged and out to vote. We also need you to get other people to vote. At our office, we joke and say, you know, friends don't let friends vote alone. We got to get other people to the poll. So making sure that people register and then turn out. That's at the heart of this. Because we, the people, need to use our voice. And then after the election, then we need to hold everyone accountable. And if folks need help doing all that, they can go to our website at networklobby.org. And we've got a toolkit up there. We can get you, you know, help you get registered. We can help you know about the races that are going on in your state. But please, I beg you, vote. That's what our nation needs.
Absolutely. Sister Simone, one last question for you today. After Kentucky, where are you headed off to?
Oh, then we're headed off to West Virginia, North Carolina, taking a teeny break for a little vacation because I got to go to a different meeting. And then we're doing Louisiana, Georgia, and then leaving the bus in Georgia because it costs a lot of money to drive this thing. So, and then we're flying to Colorado to do a Colorado leg. So those are the states coming up. It should be great.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for what you're doing. We really appreciate it. And God bless and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Sister Simone Campbell of Nuns on the Bus. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created AARP.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit AARP.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Imagine me.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. Also, folks, go to our website, theunionedge.com. Sign up for our e-activist newsletter. If you're local, your organization needs some help, we'll get the word out. If you're willing to help, we'll get the word to you. It's called Solidarity. We're all in this together, and it's a great way to support our communities. Right now, we've got Brian Powell on from Media Matters. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Charles.
Brother, I got to tell you, narcissism goes both ways in this country, especially on Fox News. And, it never ceases to amaze me how people will undercut their own best interests. Some people will undercut their best interests just to take a whack at the president. Laura Ingraham's blaming gender equality and political correctness on the White House security breach. Really?
It's pretty remarkable. There's really no low that they won't stoop to. And like you said, to hit Obama. Yeah, she, I think everyone's probably familiar with the story of the man who breached the White House fence and made it into the East Room.
Right.
And Laura Ingraham is suggesting that, this wouldn't have happened if the Obama administration hadn't prioritized putting women both in the position where a female Secret Service officer was stationed inside the White House, but also the female director, first female director of the Secret Service. She's suggesting that political correctness played a role here, that those weren't the most qualified people for the job.
Well, wait a second. Time out. Let me stop you there. First of all, that officer at the door that got run over, okay, that's what happened. You get run over sometimes. When I was a cop, I got run over. Okay? That's what you usually have backup for, but that's another story. Long and short, who's to say she wasn't hired in Bush's day? Because there have been many women in the Secret Service. That's how you do the details for the First Lady and the kids if they're female. So this whole thing that Laura's saying that the political correctness and gender equality, No, Laura. Female Secret Service officers have been serving this country for many years. They females serve in the military. They serve in law enforcement. As a matter of fact, it was a woman who led the airstrikes against ISIL in over in Iraq and Syria. So women can do the job. Let's get past that.
You got it.
Julia Preston,
the you know, the now the leader of the Secret Service, director of the Secret Service, was a Secret Service agent herself for 30 years.
Yeah, which is longer than Laura's been in broadcasting. And oh, by the way, Laura, if it wasn't for people breaking the glass ceiling, you wouldn't be in broadcasting. You know? So, Brian, how do we get this message to Laura Ingraham?
It's remarkable. You know, I don't know how we get it to Laura Ingraham. And the sad part is that other people are echoing Laura Ingraham's argument here. The Rush Limbaugh, naturally, and even a couple of the panelists on Morning Joe on MSNBC this morning were echoing this political correctness line and suggesting that the Obama administration was more interested in appointing the first female director of the Secret Service than anything else. So,
yeah,
pretty ugly argument.
Yeah, it's a hugely ugly argument. It's wrong. It's inappropriate. I don't know what they're trying to teach their daughters, but my daughter knows better. And quite honestly, you know, when they're at the same breath saying, oh, we should have a man who was run out of the United States military, who tortured people, to run the Secret Service, really? I don't think so.
I was just going to bring that up with you. I mean, that's the next big thing. Is this? There's now this push to try and see Alan West as the next director of the Secret Service. I mean, the idea is just patently absurd.
Right, and quite frankly, if he's willing to violate the Geneva Convention, if he's willing to violate the Uniform Code of Military Justice, I mean, what's he going to do? Start shooting veterans on the lawn of the White House? Because that's what we're talking about. They were not going to be happy until that man got shot. And then what they were going to do is, look at what President Obama's doing. He's killing veterans. That's their argument.
There's no way to win. I mean, there's just no way to win. And no matter what Obama does or doesn't do, there's no low that the right won't stoop to attack him. I mean, you know, you're right. Laura Ingraham today, you know, is moving on from the Secret Service thing to claim to attack Obama for Ebola, politicizing the patient who's contracted Ebola in Texas, calling for a travel ban because Obama's, quote, core ties to the African continent undermine his ability to be a credible, you know, way to contain the virus or to, you know, contain policy, to enact policy on it. So, you know, Laura Ingraham's on a roll this week.
You know, it sure sounds like it. Sure sounds like it. My goodness gracious sakes alive. You know, you have to hand it to the writing team that they have and the imagination that they have to come up with these, you know, my goodness gracious sakes alive. Don't forget NSA, IRS, Benghazi, Bigfoot, UFOs, and the Loch Ness Monster. You know, all those things work together, and quite frankly, it's bewildering. It is. You never know when the next lie is going to come from. You never know when the next fictitious report's going to come from Laura or Fox News. And quite frankly, you know, those people that buy into this, you know, I think War of the Worlds demonstrates just how willing people are to buy into it.
You're right. And Laura Ingraham's comments were particularly awful today about women, because they come on the heels of a rant that she went on last week in which she, you know, suggested young girls should be shamed for what they wear, and suggested that if we want to address misogyny and date rape, the place we should start is by telling girls how to dress.
So in other words, what she's saying is it's the woman's fault.
In other words, what she's saying is it's the woman's fault. A remarkable thing for her to be saying, for right. anyone to be saying, but particularly right. a woman, and particularly in light of the other comments that she's making today.
Right. I have to wonder, what do our advertisers think about these kinds of comments?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
And ABC News, who's affiliated with Laura Ingraham, she's a contributor to ABC News, and yet she, you know, goes on her radio show and on Fox News and says all of these outlandish things. You have to wonder how long they're going to keep her around.
Desperate, seeking attention.
Exactly.
Brian, it's always a pleasure, man. How do we find out more about you and what you write for Media Matters?
Well, you can go to mediamatters.org, and you can follow me on Twitter, at Brian D. Powell.
And, brother, if you include us at the Union Edge, we'll retweet it for you. We appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good one.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. UAW Secretary Treasurer Gary Castile says German unions and the UAW are uniting in a U.S. Southern organizing effort. Castile told the Chattanooga Times Free Press that the German union and the UAW will both put resources into the effort to organize VW's Chattanooga plant. A letter of intent was signed by UAW leaders, German union IG Metall officials, and the Volkswagen German Works Council, taking their solidarity to a new level at VW here in the U.S. And there's no reason to believe that international solidarity will stop there, because IG Metall also represents BMW and Mercedes workers in Germany. Both companies operate auto production facilities in the U.S. Reuters reports that it obtained a copy of the letter of intent to jointly organize VW's Chattanooga plant. The UAW now reportedly has more than half the workers at that plant signed up in UAW Local 42. It does not yet, though, have a formal agreement with VW to recognize that local as the collective bargaining representative for the workers. That VW plant intends to add as many as 2,000 more workers by 2016. Vote totals are finally out in the railroad workers' vote on one-man trains at BSNF. J.P. Wright, co-chair of Railroad Workers United, says 3,056 rail workers voted against the one-man crew, while 623 workers voted for it. Wright says that the 5-to-1 vote against the one-man crews is a loud and clear decision by the workers that they will not be bribed and fooled by a smoke-and-mirrors contract that he says sells out their safety and that of the communities the trains run through in order to subsidize corporate profits. An executive order from New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio expands the city's living wage law to approximately 18,000 more families. Mayor de Blasio is also seeking authority from state government to match New York City's minimum wage to a living wage citywide. If he gets the authority, it would mean all New York City hourly workers would earn at least $15 an hour by 2019. The Fast Food Worker Fight for 15 movement to get a $15 an hour minimum wage started in New York City. That movement, launched by about 200 workers, is credited for having sparked a wave of efforts nationwide that's still gaining momentum. Organized labor is joining the Hong Kong democracy protests. The International Trade Union Confederation says the Hong Kong Teachers Union is strongly supporting the protests and joining strike actions. 500 academics have signed a statement of support for students and workers in the streets. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says Hong Kong students, workers, and citizens are bravely standing up for democracy and the right to peaceably assemble. ITUC General Secretary Sharon Burrow said that China's plan to allow a few billionaires to choose who will rule Hong Kong is anti-democratic and in breach of China's 1997 undertakings on Hong Kong's future. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.